Hey everybody, Craig Adams here and welcome to my podcast. Today I was fortunate enough to get Adam Rose, a YouTuber and actor from California, in my studio in New York because for some reason he was visiting in the winter. So we talk about traditional media and social media and how they mix, especially with his background coming from TV shows and commercials and more traditional Hollywood. Also, I just want to warn you that I must have nicked a cable or done something stupid with my microphone because it messed up a little bit and I sound like a robot, even more than usual. So sorry about that and I hope you can bear it. Thanks.
I'm still an actor, mainly, I'd say.
Yeah.
I still consider myself an actor first. It's what I've been doing the longest. It's what I think I'm best at. And everything else is an effort to kind of prop that up, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But recently, I mean, in the last couple of years, I've found a great joy in the... in the control I have over the content that I'm a part of or that I'm creating. And you don't find that as an actor unless you're writing your own stuff.
It's so obvious how much your personal brand and your social media stuff that you do on video and vlogs and Instagram photos helps your professional brand with IMDb and movies and TV shows. But did you know it would have such an impact? Like, I feel like your social stuff is growing so much.
I knew it was the goal. Mm-hmm. And I can definitely find moments where it has had a direct impact. I'm gonna move this mic closer to me. There we go. I found those moments, like when I just did an Amazon pilot last year. Called Budding Prospects, which didn't get picked up, but it was an amazing experience. And I know that my social had an impact on me getting that role because the director and the creator of that show, while we were making it, told me that I had auditioned, and then he kind of, you know, Googled my name to see if what he could find about me, found my YouTube channel, watched a couple of my vlogs, mm-hmm. and then was giving me notes on the character, you know, on my performance of this character based on what he saw in the vlog. You know, oh, he'd wow. be like, you know, you're a little too, you know, kind of like cool on your vlog. So I need you to like kind of pull back on being cool, you know, like, and I'm like, oh, I just pretend to be cool on the vlog. Like I try to make myself cooler than I am. Cause who doesn't try to be a little cooler on the vlog? You know, like you want to, everybody's always projecting their best self. So he was like, you know, pull away from that. I need somebody who's like very, you know, anxiety ridden. And I was like, oh, perfect. That's what I'm like in real life. Neurotic and
I have some
anxious.
Moments to pull from in yeah. my own real life. Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, he had watched that and he watched my vlog during the casting process. And I think it just gave him a, he didn't have to use his imagination to think about what I would look like on screen holding the attention of an audience for however long, because it was right there on YouTube for people to watch. Mm. So he didn't have to imagine it. And I think that helps.
So you're an actor with a YouTube channel living in LA.
Yeah, man.
Talk about that stereotype.
Yeah. Well, there's actually, I don't think there's a ton of us, in terms of actors who are also vlogging, at least not at the forefront. I don't know of a ton. I think it's starting to happen more, and you're definitely seeing people on Instagram stories kind of doing their own version of vlogging. Yeah. And obviously now you're seeing like The Rock and Will Smith. They all have YouTube channels and they have people following them around with cameras and they're putting out vlogs.
And for the most part, they're actually in charge of their social media. There's nothing worse than interacting with a celebrity and then realizing that it's a team or someone else using the account.
I think that's the big difference between, you know, The Rock and someone like Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
You know, it's why The Rock is the highest paid actor in the world right now because he has that kind of a relationship with his audience. Whereas Tom Cruise, you know, you tweet at Tom Cruise, it's going to be like, you know, come see his next movie, you know, signed Cruise Team, you know, or whatever it is. And I think that disconnect is what makes the difference in this time we're living in.
And I get it, though. You know, it's just up to what you want to do. Tom Cruise may not want to interact, but you can definitely see the growth. And The Rock is such a great example of someone who's killing it by making their public brand so much wrapped in with their professional brand. So.
It's all his personal brand. The whole thing is all personal brand. Like, I mean, if you've ever seen a Rock movie, mm-hmm. The Rock movie,
Mr. Dwayne Johnson,
he often is playing a character that is very similar to Dwayne The Rock Johnson. You know what I mean? And that's okay. There's a lot of people, there's a ton of really great actors who play characters that are close to themselves all the time. But, you know, everybody knows they're going to see The Rock, and that's why they love him. And, yeah. You know, he's got that connection with people.
So you saw La La Land.
I did.
Are you Emma Stone in that movie?
I am.
how much of that movie could we compare to your beginning of your movie career?
Oh, man. Very little, actually, because I started acting when I was a kid.
Okay.
You know, so I've been working professionally since I was 8 years old. And so I had kind of unconventional start to my work and my career. I've never felt like I was like pining for something that was out of reach because, you know, I've been at it for a long time going on. I'm in my third decade.
That's a slow grind.
Yeah, dude.
Was there a moment where things changed?
In terms of how?
Just a moment that you can kind of reflect on and be like, yeah, a lot of stuff changed at this moment. Whether it's a success or a failure.
Well, I would say moving out to LA was a big deal. I was also lucky enough to move out there with a job right after high school. And that, you know, gave me some stability for the first few months I was out there. It gave me a support system with friends. I was doing this play called Dead End at the Amundsen Theater, which is this enormous, awesome theater in downtown Los Angeles, where now it's just like Broadway shows tour in there all the time. But this was one of their last like original plays that they put on. It was awesome. It was a big deal. And a lot of people came to see it. I got new agents out of that. And I moved out here permanently, learned to drive real quick.
Nice.
Got a car and yeah. And then I think it changed everything because all of a sudden there was just more opportunity in Los Angeles, more TV, more film, more stuff. So every audition's like a lottery ticket, and the more lottery tickets you have, the more chance you have to win.
Yes, I like that analogy.
Yeah.
So what about after that? Were you just slowly growing your social media, or was there a moment that clicked like, I need to have a YouTube channel. I need to take Instagram seriously.
Oh yeah. Well, it started with YouTube, and then it shifted to Instagram, or kind of like added Instagram all of a sudden. And that happened, it's probably like three or four years ago now. So, I mean, it's been not as long as it should have. Like, I should have started a lot earlier. But yeah, basically what happened was I went through pilot season, which for those that don't know is just like January through March when all of the TV shows, like the first episodes of TV shows, are casting. And so they're creating these new casts. And it's, you know, a lot of people come to LA just for pilot season, and a lot of actors all swarm to Hollywood and try and make their dreams come true. But anyway, it happens every year. And this particular year, I got really close to two pilots, and I got beat out, one from a Vine star and one from a YouTube star.
Oh, wow.
And I was, at the time, very, like, I don't know, cynical about social media, because I was under the impression that like my work should speak for itself, which was so wrong. Like, that is just the most wrong thing ever, but I didn't know it at the time. And so I was like, all right, screw it. I went and watched their stuff, I checked out, you know, the Vines and the YouTubes that this that these people were making, and I was like, I could do this better than they're doing it. Mm-hmm. And I still didn't have a grasp on how to do it yet, and I still wanted, I was like kind of, I was wanting to hold on to conventional wisdom that I thought was the right way to do things. So I pitched a show to Mark Cuban called That's a First with Adam Rose, right? He had this app. He still has this app called Cyberdust. It's called Dust now. It was called Cyberdust. And I was like, look, if you have an app that's like a social network, it was a competitor to Snapchat, you need content. And I was like, so I want to make some content for you. Let's do this like couple minute show, like 2 minute show, where I go and do something for the first time, like fly in a helicopter or eat pork heart or, you know, whatever. So he bought it. Mm-hmm. And the problem was, is I had people filming me, you know, mm-hmm. and I was like mic'd, and it was very much a show.
Yep. And it was very on or off. Like,
I just didn't realize that wasn't the appeal of YouTube. You know, YouTube was about first person. It was about, you know, you're the creator. You know what I mean? And I had created this channel for it called Mo Life TV. Mm-hmm. And Mo Life TV was where I was distributing That's a First with Adam Rose. And I had this like master plan that it would eventually like spawn off all these different series on this channel. And it would be like, you know, something else that doesn't really exist. And it was a really bad idea because that's not what people connect to on YouTube. People connect to people, not Mo Life TV, whatever the fuck that is, you know? So it was a learning experience, and it was a chance to work with Mark Cuban, and that came out in the trades. And so that was like, it was like this weird, like jumpstart to my online content career, you know?
That is a pretty crazy story.
It's weird, yeah. And then we took that, we kind of leveraged that, and me and a friend of mine, Ben Daly, we went to Evite, the company. Okay. And we pitched them based on like the, you know, the mediocre success of That's a First for Mark Cuban. Mm-hmm. We pitched them this series called GTFO. And this was going to be on my own channel, because at this time I had realized, okay, I need to have my own channel with my own, you know, content, my own vlogs, mm-hmm. my own thing. But I still wanted to figure out ways to partner with brands. So I pitched this thing to Evite called GTFO, where my Twitter followers vote on a destination in the world, and then I leave that day. And and they bought that. And it was a way to advertise their app that they had on their phone, where people could like send out invitations, obviously, but then that event became like a social media platform where, you know, people could post pictures and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to invite all my followers on this event to travel the world, and they can vote on everything I do, and I'll post pictures on the event on the Evite app and stuff. And they were like, great, we love it. Went to Tokyo, went to Oslo, Norway. Mm-hmm. And then that, again, like that, like jump started everything I was doing online. And I got into this like travel space, and all of a sudden I was like a travel person. And then again, like dominoes falling, that led to me getting on the radar of Wow Air. They were doing this campaign called Snap Travelers, where they were going to pick 4 people to go to different destinations around the world. Mm-hmm. And
I think I know them from Iceland.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're based in Iceland, and they were advertising this like $99 flight to Iceland from the States. And also you could buy a flight to any other European country and stop over in Iceland mm-hmm. for as long as you want. I'm here like advertising for them right now. But anyway, point is I was one of their Snap Travelers, and I ended up getting to travel around the world and Snapchat on their account for them. And so again, like it just made me realize that I was no longer just an actor. I'm now like an actor hyphenated with content person online / travel person / I don't even know what.
Yeah, social media just kind of added layers to the possibilities, and it rewards the people who get creative and do something different and take risks. So
absolutely. I mean, I think nowadays, I guess it's just necessary and expected for people to be pursuing multiple things, and they don't, you know, people don't just do one thing anymore, and everybody's got their hand in a couple different, you know, baskets or whatever. I don't know. Buckets.
I want to really make that the title of this podcast. Like different hands in different
hands
baskets
and buckets.
Buckets. Oh boy. So your audience, this was over a couple of years, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I mean, that's been over the past 3 years, basically.
Okay. Yeah. So do you think your audience kind of discovers you on social media with YouTube organically, maybe, and then kind of realizes that you're in more traditional acting roles? Or do you think it's the opposite way?
There's definitely that group of people that kind of find me on Instagram or on YouTube, and then all of a sudden they see me on, like, you know, an old Bones episode or something like that. And they're like, what? Why are you on this show? And then there's the people who, you know, I think my biggest jump start on social media in terms of following on Twitter, especially, was because of a show I did called Supernatural. I did one episode of that show and I ended up doing another one, but the reaction to that first episode was so big that I ended up getting this huge influx of followers that, you know, are part of this fandom that ended up affecting my life in a huge way, right? Because not only did I have this, you know, network all of a sudden, but I also started getting invited to these conventions, and that allowed me to travel more because I was going to, like, London and Vancouver. And I would create content while I'm going to these places. And then, you know, it all kind of went hand in hand all of a sudden.
Yeah. And it's an interesting point that I've talked about on this podcast before. If you are a subscriber and listener, thank you. But this idea of traditional media and then the new media, I'd say the biggest difference between the two is the level of engagement. So
totally.
With TV, you'd watch it and then maybe you'd talk about it with your friends in school the next day or whatever.
Yeah.
And Twitter kind of changed that game. People were engaging about sports. They were engaging with each other about their favorite shows. So even more past Twitter, you know, it seems like new social media and new media is just wrapped around this level of engagement and this excitement about the possibility of being able to thank the person that you're watching, Halle Berry or whatever, and then she'll actually respond to you. That's so crazy.
That's the thing. It's that one-on-one interaction that is valued amongst, I mean, just past everything. Yeah. It's when, you know, you still see The Rock. If you follow The Rock, I'm going to keep talking about The Rock this entire podcast. Yeah. But if you follow The Rock, he will engage with randoms on his Twitter or on his Instagram and, like, answer them or quote their tweet and say something in response. I mean, he still does that. I mean, if you were The Rock, you might not feel like you need to do that, but he does that. And that's kind of some secret sauce right there, I think.
The time that it takes him to do that is small, but the effort is there. Like, it's almost as effective as a billboard campaign for his movie.
Absolutely.
If he just perpetually, you know, demonstrates that there's this possibility that he'll reach out to you and thank you and talk to you if you engage with him. Like, it's kind of like a lotto system. It's like the retweet my last vlog and you may be in the next David Dobrik vlog.
Wow, everybody's doing that now, huh? Like, I keep seeing other YouTubers doing that, you know, it's retweet smart. This, you know, if you want to, I'll shout you out in my next vlog, you know?
Yeah.
That's like I guess that must work.
It does work. There are different ways to be creative about it. You know, I've been doing my Twitter giveaways with gear that I review, And I think it's been working because the type of people who want that gear are the type of people who are my subscribers. So it aligns with what I'm doing.
Totally.
And then I also drop little pieces of micro content with whatever giveaway I do. So like I'll talk about the review that I just shot about the thing I'm giving away. So
and then you can like push to that video.
Yeah. So I think there's little different
giveaways are great. Yeah. I think they're so much smarter than pursuing like shout outs and things like that. It can be like a small investment and it can create a big buzz all of a sudden. And it's also awesome to be able to give back to people. It costs them nothing to enter these little things, you know, retweet this or like tag a friend or whatever. It costs them nothing. And then they might win this camera or whatever you're giving away. I just sent a camera to a girl in the Philippines doing a little giveaway on my Instagram.
That. Yeah.
It was awesome.
I thought that was cool.
It was great. It was great. And I can't wait to like see those pictures that she takes. You know what I mean? Like, I'm so excited.
Anyway. Because if people engage with you on Twitter or whatever and it's good, like you will share it because it helps everything. Like, it just makes so much sense. And that's what I wanted to bring it back to. Like, do you play HQ? You HQ Trivia?
You know what? I was going strong for a while.
Oh.
And
not anymore?
I've been kind of ignoring the notifications recently.
Yeah.
Just
because you know there's going to be another one tomorrow, so you can always play whenever, but it's like whatever.
I think, you know what? It's a little too much. Twice a day is a little overkill, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's just like, it's unnecessary. And I think it's probably because they're worldwide, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So they must be doing it for, you know, time zones.
Yeah. I think their large markets are Europe and North America, it makes sense to have two different time zones.
I just feel like
times.
It's just too much. And I like Scott Rogowski.
Yeah.
I think he's funny. But sometimes I just get bored.
Yeah.
I think if I was with people playing more often than like if I was at work or something, you know, I see videos of people at work playing HQ at lunch or whatever. And I get that appeal. I think that would make it a little more fun because everybody's cheering and stuff. But if I'm like at my desk, you know, editing or whatever, or doing some work, emailing, or I'm on set or something, I'm not going to just start playing HQ.
Yeah.
I don't want it to like interrupt whatever I'm doing. I want to like keep it going.
I bring them up because it seems like they have such a primary goal of pushing people to their Twitter from HQ for engagement, which makes sense because people share their experiences playing HQ and what they love about it. And then Twitter allows HQ to kind of promote their core subscribers who are the people giving them value.
Totally. So, it's best suited. Like their social is best suited for Twitter. I think brands in general, Twitter's the place to be.
And they get discoverability from Twitter, from new people seeing their stuff that their fans are sharing. So it's a very interesting feedback loop and a little different than if you had Facebook, Twitter, like all these different things that are kind of competing for attention.
Yeah, you want to focus people.
Yeah.
But also, I think it's part of it's knowing their audience. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because if, let's say, their audience was a bunch of like, I don't know, just an older generation, let's say.
Facebook.
Yeah, they'd be on Facebook.
Email, whatever. Yeah. I'm trying to imagine HQ with an email list or something like that. It seems like such a weird
traditional thing. I'm sure there's a, like, you know, 10 years ago, they'd probably have an email list.
Oh. Hawaii. It was a long vlog. It was good.
It was like 14, 15 minutes, something like that.
Okay, we're not going to call it a super vlog.
Not
but
quite.
We can...
It's not 40 minutes.
Yes.
It's not 40 minutes. Dude, I've only watched like 3/4 of your last vlog, or not your last one, but the super vlog. And I keep having to like stop it for one reason or another, which pisses me off. It's probably because I'm getting like HQ notifications.
Hey, I didn't put any ads on it. It's all copywritten, so I can't do anything. But just quick aside, you know Wedding Film School?
Yeah, of course.
I don't really care about that channel anymore. So I went through yesterday, and I placed like 5 or 6 ad breaks throughout all of those videos.
Nice.
I just went savage. It's like half pay-per-view channel now if anyone wants to watch it.
Why not? I mean, look. So what does that do to the revenue?
increased. It's like, I mean, double, triple, quadruple if people are clicking, you know. It's just more opportunity for ads. But
I'm curious what that does, like if you see any sort of dip in views or anything, or retention or anything like that.
We'll see. Things are going to start to quiet down and slow down eventually, but yeah. Why not try to make some money?
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Of course. Yeah. Look, you're providing a ton of value on that channel, so you deserve it.
Your Hawaii vlog.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. You feel proud?
Thanks, dude. I appreciate that. I do. Like, I think it's like any piece of art you create, there's always stuff you would change, or, you know, it's not a perfect vlog, but I tried a few new things in it.
What did you do new? I saw the drones and stuff, but I was also curious because it seems like your group was like biking. Did you make them stop or did you go ahead? Or
one time I made them stop.
Yeah,
I didn't even make them stop. We were just stopping because it was
okay.
A
they stop
view,
every so often,
and I was like, guys, before we go.
Because I know how much time it takes to put a drone up, get the shots, because they were good. They were thought out. You were, like, forward and looking back, like, coming back to them.
I was just really lucky that there were so many groups going down the volcano because it wasn't our group, right? Yeah. So I just made it look like it was our group going down this going down this volcano.
I didn't know.
Yeah. So that was just luck, right? That's just pure luck right there.
Yeah.
To tell you the truth, when I was shooting it, you know, I'm looking at my phone. I didn't even see the bikers.
Oh. Okay.
They were so tiny, you know what I mean? I couldn't even see them. I just thought I was getting pretty good shots of the volcano. That would have been great. But the goggles kind of freak me out. Like, I feel like I would get vertigo and, like, fall over while I'm flying.
You definitely need to, like, sit down if you do it.
Right. You can't stand and do it. And I'm often, like, on the go. And I also want to sometimes keep an eye on it.
Because that would be a great YouTube video, like behind the scenes or just like captured footage. It's called Guy with DJI Goggles Falls into Pond. And it's just like you being like, I'd watch that. That'd be trending. But yeah, great job.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, it was a fun one. And I got to try some new stuff and we were doing some crazy things. We were in some, you know, awesome place. Like, for instance, the thing that I think could have been better is the sunrise at the top of the volcano.
It was cold.
It was super cold. I'm shaking. Yeah. I'm trying to film. I didn't have anywhere to put the camera down to like get some cool time lapses of the clouds coming and things like that. So, you know, little things like that you think of and you're like, oh, that would have been great.
Yeah. But, and it'd be a beautiful drone shot, but that would just be too much for the people.
I don't think
observing.
They would have let me.
Yeah. It would probably be illegal. Yeah. And then two, I know for a fact it would be annoying. So it's always tough.
Yeah. People were having like religious experiences up there. They were like chanting and like doing all sorts of stuff up there. Wow. So, you know, I didn't want to disturb that either.
Absolutely. And then the tree thing was cool.
The banyan tree.
Yeah, India knew stuff about that, so she was like telling me some more, but it looks crazy. Like,
dude,
I didn't know a tree could do that.
I had no idea either. And when you look at it, and there, and you know, Joanna was the one who told, Joanna, my fiance, told me that this is all one tree, and I was like jaw-dropped. Because it's insane. You're looking at what looks like, I don't know, 16 different trees.
Yeah.
And then you look down and you realize, oh my God, like they're all rooted underneath each other. It's
banyan.
Crazy. Banyan tree, man.
Banyan. Yeah.
And I got some fun Instagrams there too. That was a fun little, because they had all these Christmas lights on the banyan tree. So we were there at night. And so it was just like kind of magical. It was nice.
That's dope.
Yeah.
And fire dancers.
Fire dancers. So that was kind of some of the stuff that I tried that was new.
Slow motion.
A little slow-mo, a little great. Like, you know, like fading in and out of one shot to another, like very kind of basic stuff, but you know, one slow-mo, one's going real time. It was just super cool watching this guy, you know, put fire in his mouth and then light the other side.
Yeah. So how's the reaction? Do you feel supported by your audience, or do you think
I would say I feel most supported on Instagram.
Yeah.
YouTube's, you know, I have some core group on YouTube and it's not huge. You know, like I just hit 10,000 subscribers, I don't know, a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud of that. You know what I mean? Like it was a grind and, I'm really proud of all the work that I have there, that library. I think anybody that finds me has a ton of content to watch. And you know, I foresee it growing, but Instagram is probably where I feel the most engaged with a ton of people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I like Instagram still.
Yeah, dude, your Instagram is blowing up. I love your Instagram.
Yeah, it's grown a bit. My perspective has changed since the coming of this new year. I'm just...
You're thinning out your platforms, right?
Thinning, you know, minimalism has spread on to online.
Yeah.
In a strong way.
And why shouldn't it?
And I think that's been helping things. But more so just this idea of I'm still asking questions and I still respect feedback. And I take constructive criticism from people within my close circle, less so than everyone else.
Yeah.
But I'm just absolutely doing my own thing and not really relying on other people's reactions or advice of what I should do next. And I'm just paving my own path.
Dude, you are, I have to say this, on your podcast.
Ooh.
You're an individual, man. You got a lot of guts. You do stuff that no one else is doing.
Woo.
And you kind of like, you live by the beat of your own drum, man. It's really commendable and admirable and all those able words.
Well, thank you very much.
And I told you this in text, but I'm going to say it publicly as well. That vlog where you were just like going to people's places, new spaces,
mm-hmm.
right? New places,
new spaces.
I was captivated by that vlog because you were just so, like, you're holding the camera on yourself, but you're so natural and, like, honest, you know, which is difficult. It's really difficult to hold the camera on yourself and be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Even if, and I don't mean, like, you're telling the truth or not telling the truth. I mean, like, just your face, like, just not performing at all for the camera. You're just being, right? Mm-hmm. And you were just, like... There was this stretch in the vlog, I think when you were at Brett's house, and he's talking, and you just have the camera on you the entire time, listening to him. That was fucking great.
Yeah.
That was so great.
It's funny.
And I think that's probably the actor in me noticing that.
Mm-hmm.
But, and maybe other people, you know, felt something about that vlog too. But anyway, it just... It was really well done and interesting and different, and I was compelled to text you when I watched it.
Thank you. Yeah, I would say it's probably one of my most authentic vlogs I've ever made. And
so
I think
authentic.
That's what you're describing.
Yeah. Like just you listening. That was great. Like not people aren't doing that. That's something that I don't see. And I was almost like shit. Like I got to do some more of that. Like I got to let people see me listening. Like you don't always have to put the camera on the person talking,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's like a filmmaker thing. Like, of course it's so much more interesting to see a person listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the tough part for people is to, when the camera's recording, to really be listening.
Yeah.
And you were really listening.
Yep. So nothing changes as soon as that camera goes on because...
Yeah, you...
2017, Craig, a lot of people who start out on YouTube, is acting and
I
performing.
I know about that, man.
Forced positivity and forced... my life is so crazy. Here
I'm super guilty of that. Yeah. I'm so guilty of that.
I'm finding a new calm and a new balance in just sharing who I am authentically.
I'm trying so hard to do that.
And just letting the people who appreciate that follow.
Yeah.
And just not caring about anyone who doesn't because they eventually
great.
They go away.
It's great, dude. It's really great. Mm-hmm. And it's, you're right. It's, you know, you can't lose if you're just being you.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you didn't like compromise yourself in any way. So who cares who's there and who's not?
Yeah.
It's such
power. I feel very powerful in this new 2018.
It's why you're doing really well because you have those instincts to do that. And there's a confidence there that I think people are attracted to. I think it's just, it's definitely something that I fucked up, you know, in the beginning of my content creation, because I didn't know, you know, because I was navigating a field that when I first started making YouTube videos, I wasn't even watching YouTube videos. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't even know what the hell was going on. So I, you know, found a few people whose videos I appreciated, and that became like my very narrow view of what YouTube was, you know, and I had no idea that there was just like so much more going on. And so my videos ended up being like, you know, basically very similar to Casey Neistat's. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like actively having to like push away from that in order to like expand my view, because there's definite, and I think honestly, I don't beat myself up about that, because everybody's got to do whatever they got to do to like get that ball rolling.
Just a phase.
Yeah. And if you discourage that because it's, you know, everybody gets fucking comments on YouTube like, oh, this is exactly like whoever, you mm-hmm. know, and people hate that. But
as much as we try to block out that, some of it is valid.
Of course. And there's validity to it.
If it makes us upset, it's because we believe it.
Right, because there's truth to it, of course. Mm-hmm. That's why it gets to us. But at the same time, I would say that, like, I would never do that to anybody, because you don't want to discourage creativity, you know? You want to, like, mm-hmm. nudge them in different directions, perhaps, yeah. But you never want to discourage it. And if someone's learning the trade and learning how to use a camera and doing all these things while using the framework that they've learned from people that they look up to, mm-hmm. let them do it. They should do it, you know, because eventually people find their own thing. People find their own thing. And sometimes you have to like roll into things in a way where you can't, you know, if you're worried about being perfectly unique and original while at the same time trying to learn how to use a fucking camera and edit a video, you know, you'll get discouraged and you'll stop.
Yeah.
So, that's my piece of advice to anybody who's just starting out. Don't be afraid about, or don't worry about trying to be unique and different from everybody else. Do what you know. Do what you know. And you'll find your own voice.
And have a mustache.
And make sure you have a mustache, because you'll definitely be unique then. For those that don't know, I'm rocking a serious stash right now.
Okay, so it is the end of the episode, and you made it. Wow. Congrats. I can't believe it. You listened to an entire episode, and you're exactly who I'd like to hear from. So hit me up on Twitter. You can look in the show notes for links to social media and my Twitter, and also Adam's Instagram. You can go follow his stuff and check out his YouTube as well. But yeah, I would love to know what you thought of the episode, so hit me up. I'd at least like to thank you for listening, because podcasts need engagement. So help me out, and I'd love to share your stuff. Thanks.